even today, just planning out my day. Like, oh, I got to be on the west side to go meet them for Jewish pizza. And then I got to come back to Atwater to meet my personal trainer. And then I got to go home and rush and shower and make sure I get back here on time. Like, it's like all like. And
by the way,
like,
we are going to have Episcopalian hors d'oeuvres at the end of this.
Nice.
So
that's great. You know. A full day of
various religious foods.
Yeah. Yeah. Teacher's like, okay, everybody, all right, pop quiz time. We're going to do the vocabulary twist. And I just yell out, wait, I got to make my cheat sheet.
I like to joke that I make my living throwing away dead people's sex toys.
I can guarantee you there is nothing you have felt that I haven't felt.
Yeah, and I am a formerly miserable person.
If people don't know how you are, they cannot help you.
Anxiety is the rattling of the lid on the pot of boiling water.
Mm-hmm. Everything's connected, like me letting go of the past, me not hanging on to my anger, me like trying to become a present being.
You're not in your peak dieting phase now.
I mean, I was only in it for like a quick 6 minutes on a car ride once because there's no, I was in between.
Can we stop for snacks?
Yeah, I was equidistant between two fast food places.
So that if I'm in a situation with like my older daughter and she says something hurtful to me, like you're wearing a lot of statement jewelry right now.
In the very, very niche world of American ghost towning, my dad is a minor celebrity.
Well, we have 50% of the country is in dire poverty, is in homelessness. You know, LA is
50% of the country is in homelessness. That seems like not a correct statistic. Folks, welcome to another episode of Sean Conroy Gets Happier. I'm your host. My name is Gets Happier, which is how I came up with the name of the show. I am still in lockdown here at an undisclosed location high in the Hollywood Hills. It's been a long time. It probably feels longer than it's been, but it has been long. I was on the phone for 6 hours yesterday, but I was thinking about it, and I feel like I have not had a sincere face-to-face conversation with another human being in almost 40 years. But obviously that has nothing to do with the pandemic. What I'm saying is I miss you guys. And by you guys, I mean humanity. This week was rough. I had a bit of a crisis here in the guard shack of solitude. A couple of days ago, I turned on the sink in the kitchen. Do you turn on a sink? I turned on the water in the sink. I cleaned some things. I drank some water. I washed my hands. I sang happy birthday a bunch of times to make sure they were clean. And as I was doing all this, I realized the sink was filling and it was not draining, which means there was a problem in the drain or maybe the garbage disposal. I have a garbage disposal. I'm not, you know, it is the guard shack of solitude, but we do have a couple of little add-ons here and there. So it wouldn't drain the sink. There's, you know, I don't know what to do. This is a problem. I'm not the guy who fixes things. I can break anything. Bones, curfew, bread, dishes, fixing outside my purview. On the other hand, I don't want to call the plumber because you're not supposed to have people over right now. And of course, there is the complicating factor that the plumbing service I use is called Typhoid Mary's. So I was nervous about having them come over. So I did what you do when something's broken. I went on YouTube and I watched a bunch of videos about clogged sinks and the Badger 500 garbage disposal. I have the Badger 500, you know, again, sorry about that. Anyway, all the videos had to do with going under the sink and taking a look at the pipes, which is not what I wanted. I wanted there to be some kind of, you know, just drop in a little bit of sugar and a little bit of horseradish and that'll get it right out. But nothing like that. So I went under the sink, I looked at the pipes, and of course the setup of the pipes under my sink was completely different from any of the videos I was able to find on YouTube. There was just no similarity, except that it was pipes. I guess Typhoid Mary's doesn't follow typical plumbing conventions. They just throw pipes in pell-mell. So I made a big choice. I went into the sink. I unscrewed all the pipes. I took them out. I took out the washers. I took out the nuts. I took out the pipes, the connectors, the P-traps. Do you know there's a thing under the sink called the P-trap? Now, I don't know who's trapping their pee under the sink. Or maybe that's just a willful misinterpretation on my part. Whatever. Anyway, I'm pulling out pipes. I'm pulling out washers. I get to the second last pipe. Turns out that's the one that's clogged, which I know because as soon as I pull it out, water pours everywhere. All over underneath the sink, onto the kitchen floor. I ran out. I got towels. I mopped it all up. Inside that pipe, there was a clump of... It wasn't even like, oh, this is stuff that's accumulated over the years. It was just some carrot peels. Like, I had peeled carrots in the sink a few days earlier and thrown most of the peels in the garbage, but maybe a few of them washed down. And apparently the Badger 500, even though it's the 500, it cannot handle carrot peels. That was not in the literature. They did not say no carrot peels. It's like no spoons, but anyway, I cleared out the pipe and then I put everything all back together. I screwed in the washers, the pipes, the connectors, even the P-trap, which I was uncomfortable handling. And it's working. The drain drains. The sink sinks. So I am, as it turns out, the guy who fixes stuff. I'm a real man. I might grab a club and go out hunting later. However, as I say that, I'm also quite certain that I have done it completely wrong and that at some point the pipes are going to leak. So far it's been a couple of days and I haven't had any problems, but I also have yet to run the dishwasher. So we'll see. Here's another thing that's been going on. It isn't really a crisis. It's more of a low-grade predicament I have been unable to solve. It's food-related, I'm warning you. I've spoken before, probably at length, about my aversion to banana flavoring. I find it repulsive, disgusting, gross, unnecessary, not even a pale shadow of the real thing, a chemical assault on my sense of taste. But I can also tell you this. I don't insist on a lot of things in my diet. For example, I insist on no feathers. I insist on no poison. I insist on no shells unless they're stuffed. That's mostly it. But one thing that I find makes a difference for me is, do I have a banana for my third cup of coffee in the morning? This is very important. It doesn't matter what I eat, whether it's oatmeal or bacon and eggs or bacon and oatmeal or eggs and oatmeal or yogurt, or I'm not going to lie, sometimes it's pizza or even nothing. By the time I get to that third cup of coffee, I need a banana. I don't know why. Maybe it's the potassium, all the highly touted health benefits, which hopefully you've heard about because they have been highly touted. Or maybe it's even just that I look at a banana and I see that it is two-thirds absolutely delicious and one-third comedy potential. So here's the low-grade predicament. Bananas, as it turns out, ripen. It's a natural process. It continues relentlessly from the time you buy them till the time you eat them. It cannot be stopped. And because of everything that's been going on, I've been trying to go to the supermarket only once every 10 days or 2 weeks. So I go, I get a bunch of bananas. I guess it's actually, the technical term is a murder of bananas. I get a murder of bananas. Day one, I'm fine. Day two, I'm still good. Day three, okay. This one still works. Day four, uh-oh. This one's a little too ripe, but it's still edible. But as I'm eating it, I'm like, oh my God, there's 6 to 10 days left. and I know what's coming. Brown spots, bruises, brown patches. Ultimately, a black peel filled with mushy garbage. If I run out of bananas, I can't eat those two ripe ones. What am I going to have with my third cup of coffee? And I know you're saying, Sean, Granny Smith's will hold up for a month. Buy a bunch of apples. To which I say, fuck you. This whole lockdown, I am living half my days two bananas behind. The good part of that is I am writing a script, a film script. It's a Western. I've been working on it the whole time, and it is called Two Bananas Behind. All right. My guest today is Carl Tart. He's a hilarious comic. I've worked with him for a couple of years now. I love performing with him. I also just enjoy hanging out with him at a bar afterwards. He's great. I enjoyed our conversation. I hope you do too. Here's Carl.
I feel like it's a little weird that comedians have this reputation of being miserable people, and yet they take it upon themselves to go, I'm going to go up on stage and make people happier.
It's a weird thing for me now because I turned 30 this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it immediately took like a weird dip for me.
You felt it?
Yeah.
You were like, fuck.
Yeah.
Why?
Because you're faced with your own mortality in a way. And just, I know.
Just wait, my friend.
See, that's the thing though. I don't want to sound like I get it. I'm right. Still young. I still got a lot of stuff. But it's still like, man, like, because now I'm 30. That means my parents are getting older.
Right.
And my parents have always been, my parents had me at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
So they've always been like the young, cool parents.
Didn't you say your dad is younger than I am?
My dad's 50.
Yeah, he's 2 years younger than I am.
And my mom's 48. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's 4 years younger than I am.
And
I'm just doing math here.
Yeah, but they like it. I went to my dad's 50th birthday party, and it was weird sitting there with my dad, being like, "My dad's 50,
right?
And I'm 30.
50 is so fucking old.
No, it's not. But it's weird.
Yeah,
like seeing I remember my parents when they're 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my dad being young and vibrant and athletic, and now he's like a 50-year-old man.
He can barely walk.
Well, that's because of football.
Uh-huh.
But no, he actually walks a lot. Uh-huh. He's a postman. But
so he does lot of walking.
Yeah, he walks a ton. Yeah. But I think.
No, I know what you're saying, because when I was in college, I had a girlfriend whose mother turned 50.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a big surprise party for her. And we went to the party, and there were all these signs that, like, I think they said something like, it was something about still nifty even at 50 or some, you know, some kind of dumb thing. And I was like, wow, she is getting up there.
Yeah.
You know? And then when I turned 50, I was like, this is how old she was. I am barely getting started.
And you don't feel like, you don't feel any different than you did when you were 25.
No.
You? Yeah.
It's just all connected.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it does resonate. That doesn't mean that you don't go, holy shit.
Yeah, I still get with my high school friends and we joke around just like we did in high school. And then you think about it, it's like, man, guys, look around this room. We're 30 now. And this was the year that everybody had their big birthday bashes because we all turned 30.
30's a big one.
And so like it's been like a few, like my friend Alicia, we went to her party a couple weeks ago. She's like the youngest out of us. Her birthday's in October.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to one next week, actually. My friend Leanna, who is turning 30.
So it's just hitting you again and again.
Yeah.
With the same people.
Because I've known these people since I was 12, 13, 14 years old. And now we're 30.
Right.
And it's just different. It's
And do people have like kids and stuff at this point?
Yeah, people have kids.
Yeah.
My buddy Mike's got 3.
Wow.
Yeah.
Same age as you.
Yeah.
So he just got to work right away.
Yeah. Real quick.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it changed my hat. I wasn't as happy for this birthday as I was. And now I'm coming up on 30. I'll be 31 a month from today.
A month from today. I'm just making a mental note so I can put it in my calendar.
Please
later
do.
So I can
January 5th.
Throw you a surprise party on January
5th. I would hate that. Hate surprises.
Why?
Ugh.
You don't want to have a surprise birthday party at some
point?
No,
tell me. Tell me.
You
I'll show up. I'll be there. Tell me who's going to be there. Tell me what I should wear.
So the 30 thing hit you hard.
Yeah.
And before that, you felt like everything's cool.
Everything's cool, yeah. Like, I mean, as I've gotten older, progressively, there's, like, things. I think the being this far away from high school when it felt like there was not a care in the world, mm-hmm. and my only thing that made me unhappy back then was, like, my mom getting on my nerves. My coach yelled at me. Some girl made me mad. Like, it's...
like, very tiny concerns.
Yeah. And now it's, like, every little thing. Like, now I got to pay bills and gas. And, like, I'm never happy on the first of the month.
Oh, of course. Like,
it's just, you just...
And are you a guy who pays your bills on time?
I do, yeah. Because mm-hmm. I'm scared.
Yeah.
But it is a odd thing that... I'm still happy. I still have a good time. I think, for me, like seeing friends, still doing what we like, still doing improv shows and stuff, like that stuff still makes me really happy. It's mm-hmm. fun. I like to have fun, but the happiness is different because now I just think more, and I think that's what changed about it. I just think about everything more. Like everything
you're a grown up, and it's hitting you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and everything seems more extra than what it should be. So like, even today, just planning out my day, like oh, I gotta be on the West Side to go meet them for Jewish pizza. And then I got to come back to Atwater to meet my personal trainer. And then I got to go home and rush and shower and make sure I get back here on time. Like, it's like all, like... And
by the way,
like,
we are going to have Episcopalian hors d'oeuvres at the end of this.
Nice.
So
that's great. You know. A full day yeah. of...
Various religious
foods.
Yeah. Can't beat that. So you're saying that doing comedy is something you do because that gives you happiness.
Absolutely. Improvising. You know we don't make no money from that.
What are you talking about?
Oh, me and you get paid.
But thank you. We gotta let people know that.
Yeah, me and you get paid. But
the big bucks.
Yeah.
The big bucks.
Well, Besser personally signs my checks, $84,000 a year. Right. To be on Harold Night. But
it's like a bonus. It's like a nice bonus.
Yeah.
No, of course. Yeah, we don't get paid. And so there has to be something that keeps bringing people back.
Yeah.
And it's not clearly, for me at least, it's not... there's going to be a talent scout in the audience yeah. who's going to discover me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I don't even think about that anymore.
Yeah. Like, I do think at some point 25 years ago, that was something that I had in my head.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, I was like, this is ridiculous to even think that way. Yeah. But as you said, there is an element of like, oh, it's nice to just see the people I know and spend time with them doing this thing that we've all learned how to do.
And it makes me happy to see other people happy. So when that audience is full of people laughing their asses off, and I did that, I'm responsible for that. Me and my friends, people who I care about, that makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. Creating joy in other people.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always liked to do that since I was a kid. Making my mom laugh if she felt sad or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
And it's always been a fun
thing. Were you always the class clown?
I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. My friend Linda brings this up every time we see each other, which I think, like, I hear it, I kind of forget about it sometimes, but I was mm-hmm. like, oh, that's a pretty good joke. So it was my English class. My teacher's name was Mr. Riker, and he was, like, Alan Arkin-looking dude.
Uh-huh.
And he was a very cool guy, very nice, kind of raspy voice New Yorker. And he would give us these vocabulary quizzes, and basically he would, like, say the definition of the word, and we'd have to
write the word
down. Mm-hmm. And so everybody just would make these tiny cheat sheets. Everybody in the class did it because he would just sit at his desk and just kind of look down and just like say the definition, like, okay. So,
and you would know what words you were getting quizzed on,
yes.
So you would have the words ahead of time.
Yeah, have the words and definitions ahead of time. And one day we were like in class joking and stuff like that. And teacher's like, okay, everybody, all right, pop quiz time. We're going to do the vocabulary twist. And I just yell out, wait, I got to make my cheat sheet. And everybody started laughing because we all knew.
Right. Everybody had it.
And Linda brings that up every time she sees
me. Do you think he did not know that you all had cheat sheets?
He probably did know.
I think he did.
He had to have known.
Because I was a teacher and I always knew what was going on. And you just have to pick your battles sometimes.
Yeah.
And go... all right.
Yeah. You know. We all just like would have our hands under our desk like this.
And was everybody yeah. cheating all the time?
On what you could cheat on. Like, I never cheated.
Math.
I couldn't cheat in math because no. I didn't even know how to.
We like, used to, I took calculus senior year of high school and there were two calculus sections. Mm-hmm. And we realized very quickly that he would give the same tests to both sections and he would give it to the other section first.
Mm-hmm.
So we would get the test before the test and figure out all the answers, and everybody would get, we always like got a couple wrong on purpose.
Of course.
Just to make sure he didn't pick up on it.
Yeah, because teens are smart. That
but in retrospect,
sure,
I'm like, he must have known at some point, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't cheat math because I just didn't even know how to. Our teachers would always be like, show your work. And so, like, if you have to show your work, I'd be like, well, there's no use in me cheating, writing down the answers. Right. I got to know
how
I got there. Mm-hmm. And so I would just fall asleep during math tests. I would take that F. You needed a 2.0 to play sports.
Right.
And I was like, okay. And I went to a performing arts school. So a lot of my classes were like music classes and stuff like that.
They were big on sports at the performing arts school.
Right? It's still a public school. Uh-huh. Still a large public school, but it was a performing arts academy that I was in.
Within the school.
Yes.
And so how many we used to call mini schools in New York? How many mini schools within the school?
SLC, small learning communities. Uh-huh. We had, I think, 6. So like the 2 biggest ones were the Academy of Music and the Humanities Magnet. And then there was like math, science, medical, like criminal justice and stuff like that, but those were just like the regular school, basically. Uh-huh. Like the Music Academy and the Humanities were like schools that you had to apply for and get in and stuff like
that. So they were the better students in those schools.
Yes, and I 100% agree with
you. In the criminal justice program, they would maybe give them like 1 class in
civics, like forensics or something. Something like that. And mm-hmm. But they were just like taking gen eds.
Right.
Like, but we had like a full load. Like four of your general, like math, science, English, history, and then like 3 electives. So
you're always taking 3 different arts classes.
Yeah. Well, I would take 2 and a sport.
And a sport. Oh, yeah. So that was part of your elective.
Yeah. Because it was practice was 7th period. That was the last period of the day.
Got it.
And you just go to practice. So football season, I was in football, 7th period, basketball, baseball, track, so on and so forth.
What about the summertime?
Summertime football practice and basketball at night. Yeah. Two a day football in the morning, open gym at night.
Wow.
Never was at home. Very extracurricular.
Yeah.
But what was I talking about?
Who the fuck knows?
Oh, happiness.
Yes.
High school made me happy. I peaked.
You had a good time in high school?
Yeah.
You peaked in high school?
Yeah.
I feel like I had a great time in high school too, and I did not have a great time after that.
Yeah.
I did not have a great time in college.
I only went to college for a year.
Uh-huh.
And then I started doing improv.
Oh, really? So mm-hmm. you were, like, not interested?
It wasn't that I wasn't interested. It just, I wasn't interested. Yeah, I guess that's the right way to do it. I got cut off the basketball team. I played basketball in college for a year, got cut from the team.
And you were like,
and I was like,
I'm not interested.
Yeah, I was like, if I can't even make it here, I'm not going to transfer to another school and try
if
to do
I
this
can't
again.
Make it here, I can't make it anywhere. Not to bring up the show business thing.
Yes.
But, yeah.
And so I was like, I'm done with basketball. I'm done trying to pursue that as a option. I'm not good enough to play.
Uh-huh. You didn't want to try it somewhere else.
No. Because the route I would have had to take would have been like, go to junior college
right.
And try there and then transfer to another school.
JUCO, they call it.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm not doing that. Right. I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to go to junior college in Kansas somewhere. Like, I'm not doing that.
Kansas sucks, man.
Kansas sucks. Yeah. No, so I stopped. I came back here and I started doing improv. And I was like, this is fun.
Right.
And I'm good at this.
So the performing arts stuff paid off, ultimately.
I was instrumental music. I wasn't even an actor.
What instrument?
Saxophone. And nice. Piano.
Which saxophone?
Baritone.
Oh, see, I played tenor, so.
Yeah, I learned on the tenor.
Mm-hmm. I learned on the alto.
Yeah.
Then I switched. I guess that's what you do. You go one down.
Yeah, the B flat to the E flat. Mm-hmm. They made me switch because I was big.
Too big.
Yeah. And so they was like, you have
you to. You can hold it.
Yeah.
You can hold it.
But I wasn't in marching band. I wouldn't carry that thing around the damn marching band. Mm-hmm. It was like jazz band. So I got to rest it on the floor.
Right. So after that, so you went to college.
Yeah.
That was not your thing.
Not my thing.
And then you started doing improv.
Mm-hmm.
Now you said you peaked in high school.
Yeah. But I was popular.
Uh-huh.
I had fun every day.
Right.
I only say I peaked because people say if you keep talking about it after, that means you peaked in high school. And I do constantly be like, man, high school was tight.
Right.
High school was popping.
I mean, I don't feel like that for me was true. Like, I don't feel like I was popular or anything like that. But I just enjoyed myself and was engaged in daily, like, learning things.
Yeah.
And I was interested in what I was learning, you know?
Yeah.
And then I got to college and I feel like I was so worried about, honestly, I thought I feel like I was so worried about what people thought of me.
Yeah.
You know, like I was so concerned about all these people who were judging me all the time. And it was not fun.
Yeah.
It was not fun. And so I went into a business where you are constantly judged by other people.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I'm also a person who always, until recently, always cared about what other people thought of me.
Until recently?
Yeah.
What changed?
I started doing podcasts and started to become fairly popular with them and realized it doesn't matter what you do, there's going to be somebody who dislikes you.
Right.
And I was like, I can't be upset by that. You know what it was? I saw a comment about an episode of TV that I did on Reddit. Somebody sent me. It was like, yo, man, people love you on this show.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is cool. And I was like, oh, wow, that is pretty cool. And I read the comments, which they tell you.
What was the show?
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
You did Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
People loved your appearance on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah. It was like, and then people were kind of in there being like, oh, that's Carl. He does a lot of shows, a lot of podcasts that I like. He's cool, blah, blah, blah. And then like some girl came in there and said like, oh, I kind of know this guy. He's kind of a dick. Right. And I'm like, I don't know who this person is. And then what she said was like totally wrong about me. And was just like, oh, I kind of know this guy. I kind of know this famous person, which, A, not famous at
right.
all.
Right.
And she was like, I kind of know this guy. Yeah, he's kind of a dick. He's kind of mean. And I was like, what? Like, nobody says that about me.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, I stewed over that comment. And I was
of
like,
course. See, that's what's so fucking weird about it is you had all this love from all these people, but that's the one that sticks out, right?
And somebody even defended me to her and was like, actually, I interact with this dude a lot, and he's always really cool to me.
But the one you remember is the negative one.
Yeah.
There's something about our brains that takes that in and holds on to it.
Because I wanted to know, like, what encounter did we have that you went away from it saying,
what encounter did you have that she thought you were famous?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Nobody knows me. It's going to be your lowest rated episode.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, it's good to have that realization.
Yeah.
Because if you are putting yourself out there on a regular basis, there's always going to be people who have shit to talk.
Yeah. And even if 100 people could say, like,
love it.
First, and then 2 people are going to be like, man, I don't care for it.
Yeah.
And you want to know why. Why?
Right.
Like, that person's miserable.
It's so funny because I was just reading comments on a podcast I did not long ago, and it was fine. It was fun, whatever. And there was a lot of nice things that people said. And then there was one comment, and it wasn't even a negative comment about me. It was only positive about a couple other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that in, you know, like who cares? Like, this is this person's perception. Why should I care what they think? Like, what they took away from it was, I like that guy and that guy. The other people I'm not even thinking about.
Yes, you know? I do a podcast with 2 people now who have a very popular podcast by themselves.
Uh-huh.
So most of their fan base came over to our joint podcast. And for a while,
it was the comments who the hell was is like, this guy?
Yeah. Right. Or the comments would just be like, man, those 2 dudes, great. Bye.
Right.
And that was the end of the comments. Like,
and it's hard not to be affected by that.
Yeah.
So it's good that you've had that realization.
I wake up every day and check Twitter. Like, because clearly I hate myself.
I do it too. And there's no reason to do that.
And that timeline, I'm talking at 8, 9 in the morning, is already just
so
full of trash.
So negative.
Like,
it's a cesspool.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
And it's proving that everybody should not have a voice. Some of these people should not be heard. And who's to say who are the people who do get to be heard?
Right.
But some of these people don't deserve to be heard because all they do is troll. And it's that whole trolling culture that we live in is now taking over to people who don't troll, who think it's normal. So like the whole idea that a person who is in the public eye has to deal with criticism.
Valueless. Like immediately somebody, I mean, it's exactly what you're saying, except on a much larger scale.
Yeah.
It's like some girl who doesn't even know you says he's kind of a dick. Now that's happening to culturally popular figures many, many times over.
Yeah.
You know?
And people go, and people who aren't trolls justify and go, well, they shouldn't have gotten this business if they didn't want to hear me sitting on my couch tearing them down. It's like they forget that these people are humans.
Right.
And so I think that causes, like, I want to delete it, but it's also like a drug. Because you know it's bad for you. You kind of, it's kind of addicting to be on social media. And I don't tweet that much. I'll retweet and
I enjoy your Twitter, by the way.
I try to keep it just silly shit.
There's a lot of people that I don't, I mean, I follow a lot of people and I don't enjoy their Twitter. So I probably shouldn't follow them. But I follow you and I always enjoy it.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. A lot of the stuff I pull from is from Black Twitter. And and it is truly like amazing a lot of the time. But then sometimes it's not.
I actually enjoyed the sequence of events you talked about. I think it was today or yesterday about
Tim Allen at Best Buy.
Yes.
Yeah, it was wild.
Uh huh.
I'm walking out of Best Buy and this old dude's kind of standing in front of a Tesla, like locking it. And I go, it looks like Tim Allen. And I look, I go, damn, that is Tim Allen.
It's funny also that he was locking the door of his car, just because that's such a big component of his comedy. Is like, men know how to lock their car doors. They're like,
It was crazy. I looked at him and I was like, hey, how's it going? And he just went, hey. And Kevin pushing. And I'm like, that's Tim Allen. Uh-huh. That's really cool. And then I was like, man, Tim Allen, I'll be out here tripping. But it is, it's a weird, like, I grew up with him. I grew up watching Home Improvement every night. I grew up, you know, with him as Buzz Lightyear, all this stuff. And so it's like, how do I, like, Twitter culture would tell me to be like, fuck that guy.
Right.
Here, you fucking racist. You hate me, Tim. You hate me because I'm a black guy. Like, no. But he just was like, hey, how's it going? Like, and just like, it was just like, it's still cool to see Tim Allen.
Right.
And then
I got in trouble once because I was late for a show at one of the big clubs here in LA. And my punishment was I had to follow Tim Allen because he's Tim Allen. Like, nobody wants to follow him, you know? And I didn't want to follow him. I was like, fuck, this is going to kill my night. And he went up and he did material that I would guess was 25 or 30 years old. You know, all his classic hits.
Mm-hmm.
And he fucking destroyed.
Yeah.
Like, just brought the house down. And so I'm standing over to the side, like going up next, and I'm like, oh, God damn it. And then I went up and I fucking killed.
Nice.
And I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that just made it so much sweeter. Although that also speaks to what we're talking about, which is like, that's one thing. Like, who ultimately cares about that? Even if the set had gone horribly, like, who cares, you know? But anyway, I just was reading that account on Twitter and I got a kick.
And then I went into Walmart and was standing in the canned good aisle. I'm gonna make some Rotel dip. It's like, you know what Rotel dip is?
I have no idea what a Rotel dip is, but I'm just getting a kick out of picturing you standing in the canned goods aisle.
Yeah, so I'm standing, I'm looking for Velveeta.
Okay.
So Rotel is, it comes in a can. It's like cut up peppers. It's like almost like Pico de Gallo, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like Tex-Mex style, cut up tomatoes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes in a can. And what you do is you put that can of stuff into Velveeta cheese.
So it's almost like queso in a way.
Yeah, it's queso kind of. Mm-hmm. And then you add meat to it, and it's really good. It's really tasty. And I'm standing there, and a guy walks up. And, you know, just a pleasant interaction with a person. And I'm looking at something, and he goes,
he's like, are you looking for Rotel dip?
And he's like, excuse me, brother. And I was like, oh, my bad, man. And just kind of move my cart out of the way. Uh-huh. And he's like, how's it going? Like that. And I go, oh, good, man. You? Good. And as he's walking back by me, I look and I see his hat says Trump 2020.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, that was just a pleasant interaction. And I equated it to like a Southern interaction, because in the South, people just kind of coexist because people are so nice and stuff like this. So you have these different opinions. And it's also like, I've met West Coast Trump guys and they're usually like, these like kind of dumb, like, I'm gonna call the cops. Like, you know, like type of like, and Southern people are just like, yeah, I'm still a cool dude. I like that guy better. I'm not gonna vote for that woman. Like, you know, like.
Now you're talking about Southern.
I'm from Mississippi.
I know that.
Yeah. Grew up here though.
You moved when you were very young.
Yeah. Well, I was 9 years old.
Uh-huh. But do you feel like that's true? how do I say this? Do you feel like that's true on the inside, or is that just a front that people put up?
It's probably a front. I don't know.
But they're like, I have to get along with people because we all interact all the time.
Like, I remember one of the interactions I had when I was back home for my dad's birthday. Mm-hmm. My little brother.
His 50th birthday?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, this was 49.
So young.
My little brother locked his keys in the car. And the guys that walked up to help us, these two, they had been sitting in the same restaurant we were in. And just kind of two dudes that looked like they had on a lunch break from work, you know, kind of like knee pads, boots, jeans, and stuff like that. And they walk up and they're just like, oh, yeah, I think we can probably get in there. We got the tools in the truck, but it's we might break the door off. So don't think you want that, do you? And it's my dad talking to him and everything. And I just like go and like look at the back of their truck, and it's like littered with "Don't tread on me, Vets for Trump." Mm-hmm. Gun, this my gun family, like you know, like all that. And it was just like, these guys were cool though. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think like a West Coast, like Orange County Trump person would stop to help like black family. Like, right. Yeah.
Right. Is that where you run into them out here, is in Orange County?
Yeah, or in Burbank.
Burbank has its share of Trumpers.
Mm-hmm.
Because I haven't seen them.
You haven't?
I mean, if I have, I haven't known it at the time.
I did a set at a Politicon. Mm-hmm. And that was just an awful place to be.
Why?
On every side.
Well, I don't even really know. I mean, obviously it sounds like a political event, but yeah. I don't know exactly
It's like Comic-Con for politics. Uh-huh. And all the political people come there and do panels.
From all sides?
Yeah, from all sides.
Uh-huh.
And you just see, like, I saw this kid walk up, and he had on, like, you know, MAGA hat and MAGA sweatshirt, and he had a pair of MAGA Yeezys around his neck. He had on shoes, but he had on a pair of MAGA Yeezys around his neck. And I was like, those MAGA Yeezys kind of fire. They look kind of hard.
It would be weird.
And it was like Trump like airbrushed on them. I was like,
it would be weird
tight.
If you wore that around.
Yeah, it'd be weird. Yeah. I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, that's creative. Like that to me is like a West
sometimes,
Coast Trump.
Sometimes fashion Trump's message.
Okay.
You talked about how that's the first thing you do in the morning.
Yeah.
Me too. I check Twitter. I check all the social media. I check Foursquare and MySquare and MySpace and, you know, Friendster to see if anybody has.
Are you still on those things?
and it's just such a cesspool. I turn on CNN. I flip through to MSNBC. I flip through to Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, those things are all relentlessly stressful in some way, but it's a choice.
Yeah.
It's like something we don't have to do.
We don't have to do it. I don't have to be on Twitter.
No.
At all.
No.
There's nothing holding me there. The myth that I'm going to get, one of my tweets is going to get read by.
Right, right.
Like somebody, like just like we talked about at the improv show.
Yeah.
The talent scout is going to be, that stuff don't happen.
Holy shit.
And
I got retweeted 1,700 times. That's just not going to materialize.
And
do you think that's what brings you back, is looking for that?
No, because I don't even like that now.
Mm-hmm.
Because with that comes the reply guys.
Yes.
And I don't even, so sometimes I like, even on a Tim Allen one, I'm like, I'm just waiting on somebody to say something.
Right,
awesome.
Right.
Like, I'm waiting on somebody to say something stupid.
I replied to somebody who's a famous comic that I know,
mm-hmm.
and he replied to me. So, and he has, you know, who knows how many followers, whatever. And it was political. It was, you know, I was talking about what a brainwashing vehicle Fox News is, mm-hmm. and how it's just so, and yeah, I got so many people who were just like, you ain't too bright, are you? You know, like just, and that's like a nice way of saying what they were saying.
Yeah. They were calling you the N-word.
No, they didn't go that far, but it was...
That's what I call you.
That's what you call me.
Yeah.
You're allowed to, though. But yeah, so, but why do that then?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I say that to myself,
mm-hmm.
and I'm saying it to you. What's the point of that?
I don't know. I create other levels of stress in my life, too. For example,
mm-hmm.
and I want to change this in 2020. This is my New Year's resolution.
It's coming up soon.
Yeah. I don't keep a calendar.
Okay.
And so I find myself waking up in the morning, cycling through emails, searching for the date that it is, being like, oh, shit, do I have something due today?
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, our life as, like, actors and
it's
writers.
It's all over
like,
the place.
Yeah. meeting here, audition here, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do this podcast, have lunch with this person or whatever. And it's like, oh, shit, was I supposed to do something today? It's like, well, I should have wrote it down. And right. So I've been trying. And iPhone helps you because you will open up an email, and if a date is in the email, it'll pop up at the top and say, add this to calendar.
Oh.
But even I get lazy with that because you do it. But and then you still got to type everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
I will look at the calendar.
Oh, you will look at the calendar.
If it's in there. But right. Then you have to, like, type everything out. So it's like, oh, now I got to pick the right date. Now I got to pick the right time.
So like, you never know if you're missing out on stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that probably happens once in a while.
It happens very rarely because I have a great memory.
Uh-huh.
But no, just playing. I do, like, I can for some reason remember, like,
I
have this thing tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll stress me out in the way of if I only have one thing,
yeah,
and then I'll forget about that thing. Like, let's say today all I had to do was come do this podcast at 7 p.m.
Right.
And yesterday I'd have been like, shit, I got something to do tomorrow. I got something to do tomorrow. Oh, what do I have to do? Okay, I got that podcast, but let me circle through these emails and make sure I don't have anything to do during the day.
And then you remember then that, like, you had Jewish pastrami,
yeah. Puerto Rican workout. My trainer is, no, he's not Puerto Rican. I don't know where he's from.
Uh-huh.
But I have.
He's multicultural.
Multicultural. Mm-hmm. Multicultural workout. And I was like, oh, I remember it. Like, you just kind of know certain things. But I'm like, why am I adding this extra stress?
It's funny because.
Why don't I just write it down?
I'm obviously way older than you.
Are you?
Yes. But I used to have a paper, you know, back in the day.
I don't relate.
You literally had, I mean, I had a leather-bound notebook.
Yeah.
That I would renew, like, you bought calendar pages every year.
Yeah, my mom had that.
And kept the, all right.
No, that was not the joke. I'd made two other jokes, but I'm just remembering my mom had that.
But, so, I think around 1998 was when things started to become.
Cell phone-ish.
Not even cell phone. Like, there were weird devices back then. There was, like, I don't remember what, like a Newton, and then there was some other thing that you carried around that you pulled a little plastic pencil out of and wrote on.
Oh, the Palm Pilot.
Palm Pilot. That's the thing. So all of those things were happening, and I was like, oh, I got to switch over to that. I got to be part of the way things change. And literally from 1998 till now, I have not figured that shit out.
Yeah.
And I'm still struggling with it. In fact, to the point where last year, I still had the leather binder that I always had, and I bought a new set of pages for it because I was like, fuck, it worked for all those years.
Yeah.
Why not go back to that? I haven't got back to it, but I have the pages.
My friend tried to do that to me. He tried to, because I double booked a travel plan with the show that I had promised him that I'd do. And he was like, I'm getting you a physical planner. And I go,
so you'll have it in front of you every morning. You can check Twitter and check your physical planner.
I was like, you'll waste your money. If I can't even just click add in my cell phone, I'm not going to write this shit down.
Right.
I don't have a pen.
This podcast has actually helped me because Lauren, my producer, is making us put everything in Google Calendar.
And but she does it.
She does it, right.
See, I'll look at the calendar. Somebody else does it.
But now I've started trying to put my own things in there, too, so I know, like, oh, I have, you know, a dentist appointment or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
What else stresses you out? Calendars, Twitter, both seem solvable.
Yeah. Like, delete Twitter, add a calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Delete Twitter, add to calendar.
What would happen if you deleted Twitter?
Oh, well, obviously the world would blow up.
Right.
I don't want that. For the other people who have.
Is there a part of it? Because this is how I feel, and it's ridiculous. But part of me is like, I have to have Twitter for my career. I have to.
Yeah. That's a myth, I think.
Yeah.
Because I'll see people, like, there's this guy who does these videos that I really like.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a really funny dude. And he's gotten retweeted by some big people with his videos. And he's always like, but I give me a show, point me in the right direction. It's like, that's not how the business works. Also, your videos are funny, but. They ain't that good.
Right.
Like, the way you just
They're discovered. Good Twitter videos.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he's got a ton of followers online, stuff like that. But I see that, you know what made me know that the career stuff doesn't really, is when you see people with just so many followers and they're still not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, especially on Instagram. Like, there are pages on Instagram with like 5 million followers.
Right.
And those people don't have a career. Like, their career is that. And
they endorse products on Instagram.
And so I was like, I don't need this thing.
Right.
But I do like it sometimes. Sometimes I do see a really funny joke. or a really funny video. It keeps me updated in what's going on.
Every once in a while, I catch a great story about Tim Allen. So, you know.
I do like Instagram. That one's fun.
It's very visual.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's and nice to scroll through it.
They now hide your likes, so.
Oh, do they?
Now I do what I want. Yeah.
You like whoever you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Without worrying if somebody else is going to see it.
Absolutely. One time this woman, like my friend, she was like, why do y'all do that? Why do men like the pictures of these women? Mm-hmm. These pop stars, these, why? And then we go, well, because that's what you do on Instagram. You like it. Say, yeah, but why?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you do, and none of us had a real reason. It's like, do you, and then she goes, do you think that she's going to see your like and send you a DM and be like, hey, thanks for liking my picture.
She might.
She might.
Mm-hmm.
She might.
Could happen.
Don't drag me.
Stranger things have happened.
What bothers me that I can't change?
Or that's harder to change?
Give me an example of something that bothers you that you can't change.
That I have not focused as hard as I could have on getting done what I needed to do to get to where I want to be at this point in my life.
Okay. And yeah, I guess that's something you can't, you can change that though.
No, I can focus harder now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but that means there's a lot of time that's gone by that I haven't, you know, whatever. Example, that I haven't written the pilot I wanted to write all this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can change it, I can write it. But I can't change the fact that I haven't done it all this time.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. I guess something like that would be like I've let my physical appearance go over the past, since I left playing college basketball. So 9 years, 10 years, I have, and I'm back in the gym now because I turned 30 and was like, I'm going to get back in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
But it ain't even about like getting like all ripped. It's just about like getting back in a little bit of shape. Cause I look at my, but that's also something that you can change, but I'm mad at it's gotten to this point.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And,
but you are taking steps to change it.
Yes.
Unlike staying on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Unlike, yeah. Unlike,
you're back in the gym. You're working with a trainer.
Yeah. I'm also going to physical therapy for my knee.
Really?
That was like a bothersome thing. I still play a lot of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all that type of stuff.
So how did you end up going to a physical trainer? I mean, your knee was bothering you, but you were like, fuck this, who cares? It's,
yeah,
just my knee.
To me, it was just like,
I have pain in my knee.
I have pain in my knee.
And that's it.
But I was playing basketball, and I was like not being able to move in the way that I want to,
mm-hmm.
in the way that I know, in the way I used to. And I was just like, and my knee was really bothering me. So that's what kind of put me back in the gym,
you
period.
You were still dunking, but it wasn't a two-handed tomahawk. It was,
I can't dunk anymore. That was the impetus of getting back in the gym, period.
Right.
And now that I've been back in the gym for a while and am in better shape than I was a few months ago, I still can't do it. And when I jump, like, I'll feel the pain in my knee when I come down or anything like that. And I go, I got to get this fixed now.
Right.
And I know I can, because I know it's not a tear. It's not a, it's just like a weird pain. You know, you gain a lot of weight and there's more pressure on you.
I'm aware of what happens when you gain a lot of weight, Carl.
Yeah. But yeah, so I was just like, I want all this to change. I want my 30s. I want to be back, like, physical. Oh,
I get another one. Yeah.
Something that I cannot change.
It's great, like, to see that moment of realization on your face.
It, and this is something stupid. It also comes again with, it is kind of changeable in a multitude of ways. I can be content with it, or I could do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Both are okay. I'm losing my hair.
Okay.
And that stresses me out.
Right.
Because I start thinking about what other people are going to say.
Right.
Now, I like wearing hats, and hats have become,
you always wear a hat.
I always have on a hat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a defense mechanism for a while.
Because you were like, I don't want people to see that I'm losing my hair.
Yeah. And but now it's just like, I just like wearing hats all the time. Like, I got,
you don't like your head to get cold.
I don't like my head to get cold. I like the way I look in a hat.
You look good in a hat.
Thank you.
You look good without a hat.
I appreciate that too.
But you look good in a hat.
I'm lucky to have a head that works with bald. Like,
right.
So I can shave my head and don't look crazy.
Right.
But it grows back quick and then you get to see. But
if you shave your head, nobody knows.
Yeah. Well, people know.
Well, you made a choice.
Yeah.
You got rid of all your hair. You're bald, but it's because you purposely got rid of all your
hair.
But
that stresses me out for different ways. Mm-hmm. It stressed me out because it kind of ages me up in Hollywood, which is unfortunately a bad thing. I get worried that girls won't like me.
Right.
I get worried, like, you know, and it's like they don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. But you see bald jokes online, and you see, like, and it goes, man, like, I got to keep this hidden. It's like you can't hide it all the time.
Right. People are going to notice.
Yeah. Even though that song says you can leave your hat on, you can't.
Mm-hmm. You can leave your hat on. I think that song was written about a bald man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was taking off all his other clothes, but Kim Basinger, was it Kim Basinger, 9 1/2 weeks? Who was the actress?
I'm unfamiliar.
Okay, well, it was in the 80s, Carl, so, you know, it's been out there for a while. Yeah. anyway.
That's a stressful thing.
Yeah, that's why I'm so glad that I've always kept all my hair. I haven't had to worry about that, you know?
See? I considered doing the transplant, stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
The LeBron, the Deion Sanders, two of my favorite
athletes.
Does
LeBron have a transplant?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Because that was a big thing for a while, was that he was losing his hair.
Yeah.
And so he went in and got a transplant?
Got it fixed, yeah. And Deion Sanders also did it. Brian Urlacher. Mm-hmm. Like all these athletes who I look up to, they went in and got this. And I watched these videos online of how this surgery works. It looks like it's the most painful thing you ever experience in your life.
Right.
And I'm like, why would I want to go through that? Why would I want to spend that much money to go through that? And it still might look a little weird.
Right.
You know?
Right. I mean, I'm trying to think of who I know who has. There was one guy that I worked with years ago who... This is when I worked at the Central Park Zoo. I was the announcer for the sea lion show.
Nice.
I've had some really fun jobs. And by the way, they were sea lions, not seals. I always made that very clear in the course of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then invariably the show would end and somebody would come up and say, what time is the next seal show?
And you slapped that person.
So it just made me feel very useless, you know? But this guy had hair plugs and they were very clearly... hair plugs, you know, like it was just like little things sticking out of his head.
Yeah.
And that was super weird to look at. But there was a guy, my dentist, actually, who was a French guy. I don't know how it came up, but we were just like joking about it. And he was like, if you go to France, they'll do it and it won't cost a lot of money and nobody will know the difference, you know?
Really?
Yeah. So I'm just putting it out there. If you want to move to France for 6 months, you could come back.
Come back with a full like Jerry curl.
Dr. J, you know?
Yeah, that'd be tight.
But yeah, you're right. That is a thing that is not necessarily controllable.
Yep.
Shouldn't stress you out, but does nonetheless.
Yeah.
Because of exactly the reasons you said. But it seems like all the things we're talking about are either fixable or get overable, in a sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, career stuff is tough too. I don't know if we mentioned that.
No, we haven't.
But yeah, that's it,
Tell me about that.
That's very stressful.
What is a career? How does one have a career?
I went to the UCB theater. No, I haven't had a steady job since March. And
you've done acting work here and there, but not a regular gig.
No. And I've luckily have had some great opportunities in acting since then.
Mm-hmm.
But there've also been weeks that, you know, that phone doesn't ring. That audition, you go on 6 auditions and you think you did good at all of them and none of them call. And you start getting used to, like, it's so that's really stressful. And then when you come from, I was writing, and when you come off a writing job, you got like money saved, you got all that, and then you stop that writing job, and now you're living off that savings, and so now I'm like really stressed out for tax time because I'm
you
like,
you are making me confront my own reality, Carl.
What's that?
That I was on a writing job for a long time, but for me, you said March, I would say a year ago, September.
That's
since I've had a regular job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary.
It is. It's very scary. Because like you said, the bills come due the first of the month no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you have some money saved up for a while. But to speak to what you're talking about, that is the nature of this career, this business, right? Is that it's so up and down.
It's fickle. It's a fickle bitch.
It really is. Like, it's fine, and you're like, ah, whatever, this is what happens. And I think what I've had difficulty with, and I don't know if you're the same, is there's a way to get around that too. Like, you could just go, this is how it is. This is the choice I've made.
Yeah.
You know? And so I'm not going to worry about the fact, because it's going to happen. And it's not, this is not, I'm guessing this is not the first time this is the situation you've been in.
No.
And it probably won't be the last time that this is the situation you've been in.
No.
Or you will be in. Yeah. It's like you'll have something great happen, but until you get to the level of like Tom Cruise, you're always worried about like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing going to be?
Yeah. And being that famous is my worst nightmare.
You don't want that.
Absolutely not.
Everybody's going to be on Twitter going, he's kind of a dick.
And at that point, I will leave Twitter.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be the end?
Yeah, I'll jump off a bridge.
Once you break 1 million followers?
Yeah, once I break 1 million followers, I'll go, thank you.
You'll jump off a bridge.
With my
you
phone.
Don't have to go that far. You could just delete
I'll
Twitter.
Jump off a bridge with my phone.
So that's how you're going to delete it?
Have you ever watched the documentary about people who jump off the Golden Gate Bridge?
No.
It's the scariest shit ever.
Why?
Because you're watching people kill themselves.
Uh-huh. Oh, they show it over
they
and over
it.
Again.
Yeah. They show it, yeah.
And some of the people live, right?
I don't know.
I think some of them live.
It's cold, shark-infested waters of the Yay.
The Yay?
The Yay area. Like oh, that?
Oh, right, right.
Yeah. E-40.
I don't... Some of the lingo I don't follow.
Well, he invents his own. Uh-huh. He's really cool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that...
So okay. So let me use that to transition to the next thing,
mm-hmm.
which is you have this stress of, I don't have a job. I went on a bunch of auditions. I haven't heard back about those auditions, so I'm not going to get those. There's a huge tunnel in front of me of who the fuck knows what's out there.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
I have fun with friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that keeps me like sane a lot of the time. Yeah. I go out with my guys and we chill and we kick and we drink and we like find people to date and that type of stuff. That also is an added stress level sometimes too. But like if that's not
the solution, the solution, I don't know what I was going to say. The solution becomes the problem at that point.
Yeah. But like, yeah, I think I have some really great friends and we confide in each other and in times of stress and stuff like that, we find each other and we have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you have a support system of people.
Support system.
Who are there and everybody's kind of going through the same thing.
Yeah, at times, yeah.
And know what's up.
This has been a year that both me and my, like, probably one of my best friends, Lamar, we both stopped working in March.
Mm-hmm.
We both rapped on these shows. He made the choice to leave. I was told to leave. And but we both have been going this year, like being like, damn, man, should we have stayed at that job? Because that was just a steady paycheck. But also, it wasn't always, like, you've written on shows. You know how stressful it can be.
It's fucking hard.
Yeah. And you had a like pretty big position at your show, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I was the head writer, and it was at times a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird because this is the position I want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're in that position and you're like, this fucking sucks.
Yeah. It's like grass is always green, and you can't really talk to people who are outside of that about that, because they go, well, I would kill for that job.
Right.
Like, you don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought I would kill for
you
it.
You don't know what I had to deal with.
Yeah. And then I got it and I'm like, oh, this is hard to wake up to go to every day.
Right.
Like, and then you get that break and it's like, oh, I'm relieved now. But then that counter starts to go down and down and down and down.
The bank account.
Yeah. That creates a level of stress, but we both have gone through it together. We both have been able to talk to each other, being like, I think we can be confident in the choices that we made. Because after that, my last experience, I chose to not jump back in a writer's role.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I want to try my luck acting. I want to try my luck just kind of being out doing stuff. I don't want to jump right back into another writer's room and be unhappy and maybe not do a good job.
Right.
You know, because then you start to burn bridges.
Right. If you're feeling like you're not doing a good job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I also think that, I mean, maybe I'm being naive, but I also always feel like there is out there the hope of maybe a good situation,
yes,
whether as an actor or a writer, that potentially if you keep plugging away, you could land that thing.
Yeah.
And you got to, you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, but you have to know that the light at the end of the tunnel is there.
Mm-hmm.
So you just keep going through.
And you get wins. You get small wins. Like you book something or you get opportunity. I got the opportunity to go on tour with Comedy Bang Bang.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was like a good, like.
Where'd you go?
We did. I joined them in Minneapolis, Chicago, D.C., Philly. Yeah, those cities.
That's great.
And I went with Doughboys to some other cities,
mm-hmm,
too. And performed in some amazing theaters. I got to perform in that Chicago theater, like the iconic Chicago theater. Mm-hmm. That was the biggest audience I ever seen in my life. And they all liked the bit.
Right.
Except that one girl from Reddit who was in the front. Like, you're a dick.
Who knows you, basically.
You're a dick.
She's pretty close with you.
Yeah.
She knows you so well.
Yeah. I eat what I want to eat when I'm unhappy.
Uh-huh.
And that's not
good. Not good stuff.
No, no.
I mean, good stuff, but not good stuff.
You know what my favorite thing on this planet to eat is?
You talking about that dip again?
Rotel.
Rotel.
This podcast brought to you by Rotel and Velveeta. No, Krispy Kreme donut. I think.
Can't argue.
I think that a hot Krispy Kreme donut.
Mm-hmm. And it's fresh. Fresh hot.
Yes. And it's
when
just
the sign
my opinion.
Is on.
Yes. And this is something that I don't think I've tweeted, but I won't tweet. Because it'll get replies, and it's just like, why is the world, why did you feel the need to tell me this? But this is just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Call Tart, right here in front of you. I think,
you're just putting this out there.
Just putting it out there.
And you're ready to stand behind
ready
it.
Ready to stand behind.
But not enough to put it up on Twitter.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to stand behind it. My opinion. I think a hot Krispy Kreme donut is the best tasting thing on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Just me. I'm just saying it. I love them donuts so much, I'm going to tell you a story.
Mm-hmm.
One night, I stopped at the one right here in Burbank, and I took it home, and it was like around this time of year, I think. So, like, it was rainy, mm-hmm, a little bit, and I had three hot ones before bed because I saw the hot light on.
So, you took, like, more than three, but you only
I got
ate
a dozen.
Three.
Yeah, yeah, I got a dozen. But I was still, this is when I was living in my mom's house,
mm-hmm,
and I had three. I woke up the next morning. Opened up that box, ready for a nice
don't
Krispy
Kreme
breakfast.
Don't tell me somebody got in there.
A lot of people got in there. The ants.
Oh,
they were
okay.
Carrying them all around the box. And I was so mad.
They
I almost
can
cried.
Carry one ant can carry a donut, correct? Like they're very strong,
dude. I was so mad. I would have rather humans eat them,
right?
But you open up that box and they are covered in ants, oof. And I was just like, I want to die.
You didn't want to just brush them off? And
I thought about it, and I was like, Carl, no. I thought about it. I was like, man, they just
also,
on the top.
Also, they say ants, like at some point we're going to be eating them, right, for protein when we run out of, when the green climate plan.
Yeah. I got a couple canisters of protein powder. I'll be fine.
My roommate, here's another one that I love, which is that my roommate in college was from Buffalo. And again, this was before every bar served buffalo wings.
Really?
And whatever, yeah. And so he would go home and fly back. It was like a 45-minute flight, and he would fly back with a bucket of 100 hot wings, and they would still be hot when he got back. And again, it was the thing where I had never had it before. I think there's a big difference when you're a grown-up, mm-hmm, and you have something for the first time versus when you're a kid and you have it for the first time. Because then when you're a kid, it's just like part of your makeup. Like, you don't think about it. You're just like, oh, here's a thing. This is a thing. Oh, okay. But as a grown-up, you're like, holy shit, this is incredible. So now, I still love, the ones we get now are not the same as the ones he was bringing back from, mm-hmm, Buffalo.
Yeah.
But they're still pretty goddamn good.
Yeah.
You know.
The Anchor Bar, that's where wings start.
Yes. Yes, yeah. I've been to the Anchor Bar.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds good. Sugar is a big problem for me.
Yeah.
And when I do get stressed out, like, I don't do any drugs. And so
you should try it.
Yeah. I drink alcohol, mm-hmm, but I don't do anything else. But sugar is a big problem. And especially when I want it, just stressed out, and I see a like a Taco Bell. They got that Mountain Dew Baja Blast soda.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's so good.
It sounds horrible.
It's great.
The Mountain Dew Baja Blast.
It's neon blue.
Ugh.
It goes so well with the Doritos Locos Taco.
Anything blue is horrifying.
Yeah. Did y'all have Faygo in New York?
No, we had Fanta. Okay. Was the closest thing to
they
Faygo.
They have a blue raspberry.
Faygo is the what's their names, right?
The Juggalos. Yeah, they like that.
Right.
But it's a good soda.
No, the cheap sodas in New York were Fanta and CNC Cola.
CNC Cola.
You never heard of CNC Cola?
No, I heard of CNC Music Factory.
They used to the commercials for CNC Cola. So CNC Cola was like the cheap version of Coke and Pepsi. Mm-hmm. And the commercials were actually pretty good because they would go, if you drink CNC Cola for 7,000 years, you'll save enough money to buy this Corvette. Like,
that 7,000 yeah. years.
For some reason, I love math jokes. I don't know why.
I like to bake. That's always real fun for me.
What's your thing?
Peach cobbler. Nice. I made a peach cobbler for Thanksgiving. I also made a bourbon pecan pie.
Wow.
Came out pretty good. It's a little loose.
That sounds fancy. Yeah, pies are tough.
I probably should have left it in a little bit longer.
Cobbler is easier than pie, I think,
yes.
Right?
Cobbler is easy.
Yeah.
Because all you got to do is make the dough from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And you just lay it down in the pan and then make the
put the
peach
stuff on
mixture.
Top.
Yeah. And then you bake it.
Throw a little Cool Whip on there.
Cool Whip.
Mm-hmm.
Cool Whip.
That's the official theme song,
yeah.
Correct?
Back in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool Whip. But yeah, that pie was good. I like to do that.
So there you go. That was a lot of stuff. One thing Carl and I talked a little bit about was employment. And also unemployment. That's obviously become a much bigger worry since we talked. I think that was in like November or December sometime. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to tell you that if unemployment is something that concerns you, you're not the only one. I know this because I was watching a town hall on Fox News tonight with the President of the United States, and a woman had sent in a video in which she asked about that very thing. She said, "I have lost my job because of this pandemic. I'm really worried because my bills are due, and I'm at the point where I have to rely on other people's charity to feed my children, and I'm unemployed. Is there anything I can do to better my situation?" And you know, I was watching it and I'm like, okay, she's looking for very specific, practical advice. That's what she wants. You know, what can I do? What can I specifically do to better my situation? She literally used the words better my situation, or at least she figuratively used those words. Anyway, I know I'm a little biased against the president. I don't know if you know that. So I was surprised. But the president actually had really good advice for her. And this is something I think we should all try to remember this, you know. She's unemployed. I'm unemployed right now. This is what the president told this unemployed woman. "You'll get another job. You'll get a better job. You'll make more money." So, I mean, let me be the first to tip my hat both to the president for some good, sound, practical advice, and to this woman, whose name I don't know, but whose misfortune has resulted in incredible good fortune. I tip my hat to her, and I am not wearing a hat. So that is the beauty of podcasting. Carl Tart, you can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at DammitCarl, spelled exactly the way it sounds. Carl is with a C. Hopefully you already knew that. It's funny. We talked on the show about him leaving Twitter. And about a month ago, I had done a show with him, an ASCAT over Zoom. And I was trying to promote it. And I went to tag him in the tweet. And he wasn't there. And I emailed him in a sweaty panic. I was like, Carl, did you leave Twitter? He was like, yeah. I just needed a break because I needed it for my mental health. But he's back, and he's fun on Twitter, so give him a follow. Follow me, at Sean Conroy. Email us. Email me, email us at the show. Our email is seanconroygetshappier@gmail.com. Send us an email saying, let me know what kind of hat you envisioned me wearing before I said I wasn't wearing one. Was it a baseball cap? Was it a stovepipe hat? Maybe a sombrero. Let me know what you like about the show, what you don't like, what you want more of, what you want less of, and anything else you want me to know. The executive producer of Sean Conroy Gets Happier is Lauren Dunitz. Our pre-post production producing producer is Pete Gallimaga. The show was recorded at All Things Comedy Studios in Burbank, California. Our sound engineer is Aaron Brungart, who is also our video technician and loves cobbler, but hates pie. Like Fanny Dooley, who, by the way, loves Aaron. Thank you so much for listening. I am going to go check underneath my sink. See you next time.